Well, alrighty then. Hello and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this very warm and mild May. Oh, no, wait, it's November evening. I get so confused.
In May,
I call them November. Well, we've had a lot of November evenings in May, and now here we are in November, and it feels like a May evening. It's, you know, it's been up in close to the 70s all day, you know.
That's true. I was outside probably 45 minutes ago looking at some stars, and I was out there in shorts and T-shirts, and it was just lovely stuff.
Well, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. This is North Shore Sports Night, and we talked, I think it was about a week ago, Tim, a week ago Friday, when we recorded the Salem News sports team and Nick Kukuru also, and it was 36 degrees that day, and Phil Stacey said, for the first time this year, quote, I put pants on. Well, we had to make sure we amended that to say he was talking about long pants as opposed to shorts.
Yeah, well, Phil and I used to have a contest who could go the longest during football season to wear the shorts.
Yep.
We have pictures to verify. We were wearing shorts on some very cool afternoons.
Oh yeah. Well, I know Tom Walsh, when he was assistant coach at Gloucester High School football, he prided himself in wearing shorts no matter what the weather. So. Yep. You know, you can do it this time of year right now because of the amazing, ridiculously warm weather. And I was all pumped last week when the snow came down. I got my skis out, got my ski bag, getting my ski gear ready. But no, now it's springtime again.
You just had your winter storm, that's all.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, Coach, we are back. I want to point out tonight that we have we're going to lean a little heavily on Danvers High School this evening, as we'll be talking to the Danvers High School girls soccer captains. They got off to a late start due to the way that the season was aligned for Danvers and due to their school committee and so on. So they got off, they're about a week or two behind everybody else in the NEC, but they're 6-0 in the NEC in girls soccer, and they've got a big week coming up. So we're going to talk with Riley DiGilio, who is one of the captains, a very delightful young woman. She's a senior taking AP and honors courses, as is her co-captain, Livy Anderson, who also is taking AP courses and honors courses. And Coach, both of these girls, correct me if I'm wrong, but Colgate and St. Anselm's are both Division I schools, aren't they?
I think they are, but they play on basically different levels.
Okay. You know? Well, both of these young ladies have committed respectively to St. Anselm's and to Colgate. Riley is going to St. Anselm's, and Livy is going to Colgate. And it's just remarkable, you know, the talent. Wait till you hear these kids. They're amazing. And at the same time, I think I'm gonna prelude that with the interview we did earlier in the week with Coach Jimmy Hinchon, and we'll talk with him. We'll get him to introduce the ladies, and then we'll talk to them. So we're going to have them on. Gary Larrabee has had to beg off this evening. He's not feeling well. And, Gary, we wish you all the best, and for heaven's sakes, take it easy. Get some rest and, you know, just get yourself a cup of tea or something or other and sit by and or lie down and watch the Patriots this evening, unless they drive you crazy. But we're going to miss Gary tonight because we have the Masters. See, this is why I get confused, Tim. I'm thinking springtime. We got the Masters coming up.
Yeah, that is true. I'm sure it's going to throw a lot of golfers off too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we got the Masters coming up, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll also check in with sports journalist Mike Grenier and pick his brain a little bit and have him open up the sports notebook or the sports attic, if you will. What I wanted to do with Gary tonight, and maybe we'll do it next week, was in the past I've had him reminisce about an experience down at the Masters. And Tim, when I was working at WESX on weekends and nights while I was teaching, every April, Gary would go down to Augusta National, and cover the Masters down there. And his stories written back here in the Salem News were just something to behold. And it's a place that you seem like you just have to go visit.
Oh yeah, definitely. I agree with you there. I'm sort of lost in thought here. I'm trying to get to some Masters stuff to cover for Gary, but if there is one golf course you want to play, but you can't play it.
Yeah, right, right. So, sort of like St. Andrews. And Bill Poprosky, by the way, our producer and engineer, Bill Poprosky has had breakfast at St. Andrews. He didn't hit a golf team, but he's had breakfast over there at St. Andrews. And I've had breakfast over at the PGA on Kauai. Let's see now. All right, Coach, your first thoughts on Alex Cora.
Why not? You know, I was watching I was watching the Saints stump the Buccaneers yesterday, and they were showing the sideline with Peyton, and I'm thinking, if the Saints could bring him back after the, you know, scandal that they went through, and he got suspended for the year.
Yep.
Why can't the Sox bring back Cora? You know, it wasn't a, you know, a serious felonious charge. You know, it's something that he regretted. He got banned for the year. Why not? I mean, he's coming back to a totally different team. We all know that. But the team had good success underneath him. Now it's going to be, they're going to have to build a team. Can they build a team similar to the one that they had in 2018 and get back on track for the 2021 season? That's going to be the big key. But you got to believe that the guys in there, still there from that 2018 team, those guys got to be so freaking happy that he's coming back, because they all had a really strong relationship with him. And you know, nowadays in Major League Sports, the relationship that a manager has to his team is so vitally important. You know, you got to know how to push the right buttons, scratch everybody's back, and still maintain their respect. And he managed to do that while he was the coach.
Well, what's going
to be the coach then? He's going to be just as popular. And I can imagine the ovation that he gets the first time he steps out of the dugout at Fenway Park next spring.
It's going to be interesting to see the play that comes about between him and Chaim Bloom, because Bloom is he's a metrics guy, and Alex Cora is, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, go with your gut.
Yeah, you know, I'm really so sick of metrics taking over every single sport, where, you know, you got players, baseball players, out in the field with friggin' cheat sheets in their caps, in their back pocket. Every time a guy gets up, they're looking at a card. Come on. If you don't know the players, and if the coaches don't know enough to go, hey, shift to your right, shift to your left. If you can't do that, if you're going to put it down on a card for your outfield to go, okay, who's up? Okay, I got to play over here.
Well, at one time, Coach,
it changes. It's every sport is fluid.
Didn't the coach? Didn't the catcher? The catcher used to be the man who did that, didn't he? Because the catcher would call a pitch. Your infielders would know where to play on each pitch, as a matter of fact. They'd just look at the sign. And your outfield would, too. And where the pitch was thrown, your players would react sometimes before the ball was even hit.
Right. What you would do is you watch your catcher, and if he slides to the left, the right-handed hitter, if he slides to the outside part of the plate, you know, you take an easy step to your left. Figure, okay, he's not going to get around the ball. He's going to hit it opposite field, so you move that way. Catcher slides inside. He's probably going to get it on the fist. He may pop it up. So you adjust there. Also, middle infielders used to put the glove or the hand behind the back and give a wave, and the outfielders wouldn't know behind.
Right.
Wouldn't know which way to step.
Yep.
You know. No, they take off their hat, they pull out the cheat sheet, they look, okay, who's up?
Well,
okay, here's what I do.
Hey, you know what? With the smartphones, maybe they'll be able to Google these guys, too.
Oh, I'm telling you, Rick, to me, it's so sad. You know, the introduction of metrics, you know, these numbers guys who never played the sport, okay, but they crunch all, they, all they do is sit in a room, they crunch numbers. Okay, well, this is the tendency that they have, so they'll probably do this. Oh, well, then they're going to do something else. Oh,
yep.
Boy,
Well, there is the human element, isn't there? You know, Tim, one of the things...
So the next thing you're going to see is you're going to see, you know, that box that they have, that the networks have for showing the strike zone, that's now eventually will become the umpire.
Right, and it'll have the Ted Williams rectangle there with each little segment and quadrant with the, you know, the hit percentage.
What you should hit, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, what about, I was a little surprised that J.D. Martinez stayed with the Red Sox. What are your thoughts about that?
I wasn't surprised given the season that he had. If he left, he wouldn't command the money that he's getting now. He'd have to take a cut. And prove that he's worth that much again. That's how I see it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he had an awful season.
Yep.
Yeah, he looked lost at the plate in terms of the strike zone that he normally has such command of.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is...
bad time to go free agent. So, yeah, I mean, he had the opportunity to sign on again. Now he has a chance to come back, play for Cora, have a good year. And then, see you later.
All right. Have you read anything about Chris Sale?
The funny thing is, I have not seen a whole lot on Chris Sale. We can only assume that he's rehabbing effectively. But again, with his arm motion, he's a pitch away from,
right,
you know, going out again.
When
he's on... He's as good as it gets, but you know how long? Again, he's going to be another year older. He's missed a year.
All right, a couple of other things.
I'm going to bank a whole lot on Chris Sale next year.
When we get Mike back, I think maybe we can talk. He wants to talk a little about the Celtics draft and so on, and maybe we can talk about the Patriots. One thing that disturbed me last night, watching New Orleans crush Tampa Bay. One thing that really disturbed me, and I've seen it earlier this year, and I saw it last year, was TB12 was starting to throw those pick sixes like Drew Bledsoe did toward the end of his tenure with the Patriots. But moreover, Tim, I don't know, very quick comment here, we got a couple of minutes. He threw a couple of dying swans that I've just never seen him throw before.
Well, he was under duress most of the game. I mean, they just kept bringing constant pressure. And we know from the two Super Bowl losses of the Giants, the whole key to their success against the Patriots in those two wins was they brought extraordinary pressure against Brady. They didn't let him get comfortable. He was never comfortable last night. I mean, they didn't get a first down until the middle of the second quarter.
Right.
You know, and his passing statistics were horrible. His rating was 40. Yeah. Again, none of those metrics. It was 40 for the game. It was like the third lowest in his career. And he was trying to make things happen. One of the last picks I saw, the one that was just a little pop-up that he threw, that was just a heave to try to get it to somebody. And of course, he had nothing on it. He had a crowd in front of him, and it was an easy pick. But he is throwing more picks this year. The vaunted receiving core that he's got are having troubles, obviously, separating, and he is still not on the same page.
Excuse me, did you notice the same thing that the accusations were flying last year, the receivers pulled up short, or that they weren't on the same page as the quarterback? Did you notice that last night?
I did not hear it because...
Oh, I heard it several times, yeah. A.B., Antonio Brown pulled up, somebody else, Mike, whatever his name, Mike Evans pulled up, and a couple, and one of those interceptions, that's what they were talking about.
Yeah, well, week eight into the season, and then these guys are, you know, the extremely talented receiving core that he didn't have in New England. Well, it shouldn't take you that long, again, because he was out there playing catch with them beforehand. You know, out on the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
in violation of rules, and you know they should have a better timing relationship. That I would assume that they would. If these guys are that good, okay, run down 8 yards, turn the right.
Yeah,
you take
really.
Steps, the ball's going to be there. Look for it.
Well, I hope there's a better relationship tonight between Cam and his receivers. We'll see. Coming up in about an hour or so.
Jared.
Well, okay, whatever. Whatever. I don't know who's going to start. We'll find out. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to check in primarily with Danvers High School girls soccer. Really a delightful interview with everybody involved. We're going to start with Coach Jimmy Hinchon, and then we're going to turn it over to the captains, Riley DiGilio and Levy Anderson. So please stay with us, and then Tim and I will pick it up a little bit later on.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, along with Danvers High School girls soccer coach Jim Hinchon. Longtime coach over at Danvers, and I'm embarrassed to talk about some of the things I had to go through in our pregame talk. But, Coach, you guys are having a fabulous season, so welcome to MSO.
Thanks for having me, Rick. We are having a good season, and happy to be here and talk about the team a little bit.
All right, let's get going here. You know, 6-0 start. Obviously, with COVID and so on, tell me a little bit about maybe the changes you had to go through in getting this team together and maybe onto the field before the season started.
Well, you know, things are a little bit tough in Danvers, you know, or the NEC in general. For a long time, you know, going through the summer, it didn't look like we were going to have any kind of season. The MIA came out with the regulations, but it didn't look like the NEC was going to get it together because a lot of the cities and towns were in the red, and they weren't sure if they wanted to go for it, if they couldn't have everybody go for it. But eventually, some of the kids, kind of from some of the towns, made a stand. They did some peaceful protests, and it kind of made people notice. And I think the ADs in the NEC schools started to think, you know, maybe we should be giving this a shot. And we were one of the last conferences to finally agree to play. And on top of that, our Danvers, our administration really didn't want to start up until they had 2 weeks of school under their belt, which I guess I can understand because they wanted to make sure we could do this in a safe way at school. So everybody started up in late September or mid-September, and we were still sitting at home. So we finally got started at the beginning of October, but we were 2 weeks behind everybody else.
You know, Coach, I remember that day back in the summertime, late summer, when the Danvers kids had, instead of calling a protest, I call it a rally over there at Town Hall. And Masconama.
That's a way better term. Yeah, not a protest at all.
Yeah, but
rally is definitely the term. Yeah.
The Danvers kids showed up in mass. Masconama was there, and a whole bunch of other schools. And they really, really impressed and turned this thing around. And all they said was, "Just let us play."
Yeah, the kids were great. They did it in a very respectful way. They did it in a safe way, and they just basically put it out there that, you know, we're going to do the right thing if you trust us. And, you know, we really like to let us play. This is going to be one of the few normal things in our lives. And, you know, this has been a big part of our high school careers is playing sports and athletics. And, you know, they really did a great job. The kids really, really took it upon themselves. And, you know, hats off to them. And it's great that athletics has been going on. And it's been safe and it's been done well.
I talked to the Amesbury girls the Amesbury boys coach, Maddie McLean, who was coaching the boys, and she was saying that teaching the kids a little bit differently, some of the skills that you have to do differently now in terms of the new rules, the COVID rules. And, Coach, what has that been like? Because, you know, you've coached a certain way. You've coached the skills, the fundamentals of soccer the same way, at least in terms of the fundamentals, for so long. And the kids are used to doing certain things. So what were those changes like going into before the games actually began?
I guess it created a little bit of stress for those first 2 weeks of our, you know, what our preseason was, because, you know, they took headers away and there's, you know, a lot more distancing on the field. Obviously, the kids had to get used to wearing masks. But other than that, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's been a really smooth transition, at least for us. The game is still the game. I mean, yes, there's no head balls. Yes, there's kick-ins and still the throw-ins, but everything is still played with your feet. And, you know, for the most part, we've had great referees that have let them play. And, you know, it was tough at first, you know, because they had to get used to it, but the girls quickly adapted.
I kind of like, as a parent, I kind of like the idea of no headers anymore, but I'm sure that drives you coaches crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a parent too, and I'm on the same wave as you. I kind of like that as well, but, you know, it does take away some strength. So we've got some girls that are very skilled with their heads, so they've had to adapt, and, you know, especially the defenders. The defenders, you know, heading the ball out is a big tool. And now anything played in the air, they've got to be able to either bring the ball down with their body or they have to be able to volley it out with their feet, which is not easy to do. But fortunately, we got some great players that have adapted to it.
Jim, 6-0 start. What's been a highlight so far for you guys?
I mean, our biggest highlight is definitely, you know, we treat every day like it's going to be our last, whether it's a practice or it's a game. And we are just having fun. I mean, the girls are laughing at every practice. I know they're smiling behind those masks. We're having a ton of fun.
Yep.
I kind of feel like the pressure off. So every day is completely fun. I think that's been the number one thing this season. But the number two thing is that, you know, we're playing really well, and we have a really good senior class that are really setting a good example for our younger players in the program. And I'm really happy for the seniors. We have 8 of them, and you know, they've been a big part of why we've been playing so well.
You know, Coach, teaching in the system and doing distance learning or working with the kids with the social distancing, that's stressful enough. But then when you get on the field in the afternoon, it's got to feel good to actually be able to be out there with these kids.
Yeah, it is great. And like I said, we're in Danvers, we're doing everything. I mean, I'm sure everybody's doing it. Everybody's just doing things completely safe. You know, I bring a 5-gallon bucket to practice every day that has our hand sanitizer and has our disinfectant. And, you know, we're constantly, you know, everybody comes over and it's constantly getting the hand sanitizer. And, you know, masks are on at all times except when we're taking a drink break. And when we're doing that, everybody is you know, well distanced. But at the same time, we're out there and they're playing and they're competing, whether it's at a practice or in games. And it's awesome. It's just, I'm sure it's a huge relief for these girls to be out there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and everybody, the parents and, you know, administrators, glad to see the kids getting this because they were robbed of that back in the springtime, as you well know. Coach, what's it mean to have Masco in the league?
I think it's awesome. You know, we were hoping that Masco would get let in. You know, at least in the girls' soccer side, because Masco is an awesome program as far as girls' soccer, and we want to play the best teams out there, and they're certainly one of them year after year. But you know, looking at all athletics, I think it's great. I think you know, and Masco's strong in almost every sport, and it's just going to bring up the level of play in the Northeastern Conference and all these sports. And I think it's a win-win for both Masco and for the conference, We're excited to have them.
I keep hoping for a super league that would include Ipswich and Masco and Newburyport, maybe someday, you know. But tell me a little bit about your team now, Coach. 6-0, and maybe let's start. You mentioned seniors. I'm sure you've got some senior captains you want to talk about.
Yeah, we have 2 senior captains this year. They both are in their 4th year on varsity. They were there as freshmen when we won the state title. Livy Anderson is a center back. She's going to be playing at Colgate next year.
Wow.
And my other senior captain is Riley DiGilio. She plays a wing forward for us, and she's going to be playing at St. A's next year.
Whoa.
So they're 2 really strong players. Both were Eastern Mass All-Stars last year. Libby was actually an All-State player a year ago. So They're a nice place to start. They're two great leaders and super players on the field.
Well, when you get a chance, Jim, let me know if they'd be willing to talk with us too. We'd love to get them on, maybe on a Monday night on our sports.
They would love it. They love to talk.
Okay, that's great, Jim. Before I let you go, mention anybody else here that has helped you guys out. You're looking for leadership and so on, and then we'll the last question will be a little bit about what the schedule is left for you guys.
Sure. I guess I have to mention Ariana Bazantin, who's a junior. She's a 3-year all-star for us, freshman, sophomore. I'm sorry. She was an all-star as a freshman and sophomore, and obviously she's that level again this year. She was all-state and all-New England last year, and she just went through a stretch where she scored 11 goals in 3 games.
Whoa.
Two of those games, she got 4 against Swampscott and 4 against Peabody, and those are real good competitive teams. Ari's the real deal. She's also signed to play at Colgate in 2 years. You know, she's going to be playing there in 2 years. And she's been our number one goal scorer this year. I think she has 18 points. I'm not sure of the breakdown. It might be 15 goals and 3 assists. I know Riley DiGilio also has 18 points. I think she has more assists right now. But those three have been solid. Got a really, really good defender in Gabby Chisholm, who was a starter for us last year. That's just having a terrific year. She's a junior. Junior Reese Pizzeni was an all-star a year ago for us. And she's been terrific for us playing at forward and also... I've got to mention a few of these seniors. We have Holly DeAngelis as our senior keeper, and this is her first year as a starter, and she's really coming up big and enjoying the full-time role. And then three seniors that have been around for a while that are just kind of the linchpin of our team is Mia Jordan, Julia Valancourt as midfielders, and Avery Scharfenberg as a center back. They're just so terrific leaders, and they really control the pace of the game. We really possess the ball and pass the ball well, and it really starts with them. I feel bad if I'm, not mentioning.
Right, I understand. It's a limited time here. Did you have any of these kids in elementary school?
I counted one day. It was somewhere between 8 or 10 of them at Highlands. I had Livy at Highlands. I had Ariana at Highlands. Mia Jordan, Julia Valancourt, Holly DeAngelis. Almost all those girls I mentioned. I've known them since they were 5 years old, so that's really cool.
Oh, my God. I just wonder what's in the water in Danvers, because that's incredible. Division I players and all those kids. That's awesome. And Jim, dare I say it, in this time where it's so difficult, so stressful for kids, for parents, for coaches, for teachers, virtually for everybody, I congratulate you on the enthusiasm that you have in getting these kids out there. And it has to be a terrific release, not only for them, but also for you.
It is. I tell my wife every day, going to school is great, but going to soccer practice or going to the games, that feels kind of normal to me. And just being able to be out there and do what we do every year and still be able to do it even under these strange and crazy times, it's been a blessing, and it's brought some peace to my life a little bit, so I'm certainly enjoying it.
That is Danvers Girls High School soccer coach Jim Hinchin. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with the Danvers girls soccer captains from Danvers High School, Riley DiGilio. Did I say it right?
Yes.
I did, all right. And Libby Anderson, and we're going to start with they're both captains, by the way. Riley, number 13 on your program, and Libby, number 7. And let's start with Riley. First of all, Riley, have you, being a captain at Danvers High School, sometimes it implies that you've known each other for a while and you've worked with each other for a while. Is that true or not with you and Libby?
Yes, me and Libby have been playing I think when we first started soccer, we were playing together, and we've played all the way up through until now.
So when you began, how old were you when you guys started?
I think we were in first or second grade.
Oh, my. And, okay.
Yeah, and we were playing town soccer, and then we both joined the same club team in third grade, I think.
So Livy, you guys know each other's moves pretty well, and has that sort of been consistent over the years? And then you get to know each other even better with your skills and stuff. What's that like to play with a friend like that over all these years?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's definitely just like kind of like not. I feel like not a lot of people get to do that. So it's definitely really we're lucky to have gotten to do that.
All right, so tell me about your positions. Where do you guys play, and how do you play off of each other? And then we'll talk to about some other kids and some other stuff. But how do you play off of each other, being together so long? We'll go back to Riley to start that one. Then, Livy, you join in.
I think we really connect well, even though I'm up top on the wing and Livy's center back. Livy's a player that likes to go up a lot, so when she's up there, I think she can really make a difference, even all the way center back, because we know how to play off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I'm dribbling, Riley's one of the first people I look for because I feel confident being able to play to her. I know she'll keep it, so, yeah.
Livy, being a captain, you go back 4 years and senior looks so far down the road. And here you are, you know, after being a probably a little bit nervous freshman. But you're not only a senior on the team, you're also a senior at the high school. And what does that mean to representing the team as captain, knowing, you know, how Coach Hinchin works and the great legacy that is at Danvers High School?
Yeah, it's the best feeling. I know that when I was a freshman, I looked up to the captains, and I'm hoping that the freshmen look up to Riley and I, and we just try to set a good example and be good influences on the girls.
Riley?
Yeah, definitely. I take a lot of what we've learned from past captains and past seniors, and I think that's helped us a lot to form the way we lead as captains. And I think one thing that we do really well is we connect a lot with the freshmen because we know firsthand how it can be kind of nerve-wracking being a freshman on varsity.
How difficult is that to... I don't want to say get down to the level of a freshman because that would be demeaning, but it sort of is. You know, freshmen are not looked on all that well sometimes, even though they're part of the team, they're part of the high school, and they're coming in with their eyes wide open. But both of you guys mentioned, please, to me, and we'll go back to Livy, what is it like to do that? Because you have to reach out. You've got your teammates. You've got your seniors. You've got your eye on the prize for this year and next year. But you got to welcome not only freshmen, but all the underclassmen.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely focus a lot on the freshmen and the sophomores because they're young and new to the team. And it's just really important to us that we make them feel comfortable and also confident because when you're not confident, obviously your game might not be as good as it can be. So we try to make them as confident as possible so that they can be the best they can when they get on the field.
Riley?
Yeah, kind of what Liv said. We have a lot of talent through all the age groups, and I think the younger girls really struggle with their confidence coming in. So just by making them comfortable, it's going to make them a better player on the field. So me and Liv really try to do that.
You guys are off to an amazing start. You're 6-0, I believe. Do I have that right?
Yes.
All right. And, of course, Masconomet. You guys have played Masconomet yet?
Not this year. We played them in our North
okay.
semifinal.
Well, as you know, Masco's in the league, and they're dominating over on the boys' side,
yes,
as they have in the Cape Ann League for so many years. It's a very competitive league, and it's even more competitive this year with fewer games. So, Riley, let's go back to you. So far, a highlight from a team perspective and maybe some other kid that you could point out who has helped you guys win a game this year?
You know, the first player I think of is Julia Valancourt. She is in the midfield for us, and she just really helps move the ball all over the field, connecting with me up top and then all the way back to Livy. She helps a lot. And also Mia Jordan, Avery Schaffenberg. I feel like that midfield helps us with a lot of goals and also defending mm-hmm. all over the field.
Livy, you want to join in on maybe talk about a teammate that we haven't mentioned yet?
I think one that everyone knows is Ari Bezanson. She's our leading goal scorer, and we can always count on her to score not just one, but two or three or even four. So everyone feels comfortable when she has the ball, and she can go through pretty much anyone. So
Tell me about your emotions. Libby, I'll start with you, going into the season, because spring season was a disaster, especially for seniors who did not get to do their usual celebrations for, being the class of 2020, not only in sports but also in academics and just graduation in general. I know that as a junior it was very disappointing whether you were playing sports or not. So tell me about the emotion, if you would, please, Libby, of being able to get out there now, even though things are, they're curtailed, they're under a microscope somewhat, you can't do the things that you ordinarily would, but you guys are out there.
Yeah, definitely. It's just good to be out there. We obviously didn't know what the season was going to look like, and I don't think we really cared, and I think that when we found out we were going to be playing, even with all the rules in place, we just made sure we're having as most fun as possible, and I think that's why we've had so much success. We obviously take it seriously, but we also just try to have fun, because even now you never know when your last game's going to be because of teams getting shut down and whatever. So it's definitely, we just take it game by game and have as much fun as we can.
What an awful thing to have to think of. You never know if it's your last game. That sucks. That's awful. Riley, what about your emotions coming in as a senior looking for, going through the summer thinking, okay, it's going to be all fine in September, and then it's not fine in September, and you're not going to play. But then you guys staged a big rally over at Town Square. Masconomet showed up. All the other schools showed up, and then you did get to play. So tell me a little bit about those feelings.
Yeah, that was great, because I did not expect us to play at all. So it was a real surprise, I think, for everyone. Even after the protest, I guess you would call it.
No, I'm calling it a rally. You guys were rallying. You weren't protesting.
That's a little better. Even after the rally, I didn't really have much confidence that we were going to play. So when we found out, it was just great to hear, because, even without standings and all these new rules, like, I think me and Libby and the rest of the seniors were just happy to get our senior season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, now academics. Let's go back to Libby. What are you carrying for a load this year? And I'm a math teacher from Gloucester High School. I taught there for a long time, and I cannot imagine how difficult it is going into your senior year with all the things that you have to do and need to do in addition to being captain of the team. What are the academics like? What are you carrying right now?
I just have a mix of AP and honors classes this year.
Yep.
And it's definitely important that I try and balance that in soccer. So it's been pretty good so far. I feel like the workload's been fine, but just trying to balance between soccer and school.
What do you have for math? What are you taking?
I'm taking AP Calc.
I love it. I love it. Good for you. You're going places. And do you have your applications out? You're supposed to get your brag sheets and all that stuff together soon. And have you started applying?
Yeah, I've applied.
What are you looking at?
I actually am verbally committed in my sophomore year to Colgate, so I just did early decision there.
Congratulations. What do you want to study at Colgate?
I think I'm going to do business. But I'm not entirely sure yet.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you don't have to decide today, do you?
Yeah.
All right, Riley, same question to you. What's your academic schedule look like?
I'm the same as Libby. I am taking a mix of AP and honors. I'm more science than math, so I'm taking AP biology. And I think I'm finally getting used to the whole shift of how we're doing things these days and finally getting used to how the workload is going to be, just because it's a lot of independent work now.
Mm-hmm. And what are you looking at? What are you looking at for schools?
I am verbally committed to St. A's.
You guys are killing me. And, Coach told me that, and I forgot about that. My goodness gracious. Wow, that's fabulous. Oh, my word. And what do you think you might want to study?
As of now, I'm hoping to study biology, but I'm not sure yet.
Fantastic, fantastic. My younger daughter, who was in her fourth year at Drexel University down in Philadelphia, played lacrosse at Gloucester High School. She's biomedical engineering, and you guys, as women, as young women, coming up in the business world and the science world, as a math teacher, I can say, you guys are going to bring us out of this hole. You're our future, so congratulations. I feel great. Guys, anything else you want to mention about Danvers High School or Danvers High School soccer? And we'll go with Captain DiGilio.
I just think we have a great program, soccer-wise and school-wise, and we're really lucky to be playing here and learning here, and I think Livy would think the same.
Yeah, definitely. We are all a family, especially in our soccer team, such family, and everyone's just so supportive of each other, and that goes for the school, too. So I'm really grateful to be at Danvers.
I'm grateful for the time that you guys gave us tonight. We really appreciate it. That's Captain Riley DiGilio and Captain Livy Anderson, both of Danvers High School. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. All right, there you go. An absolutely delightful interview with two kids who, I keep saying this, Tim, every time we talk to these guys, the young men and the young women we talk to as student-athletes, they're going to save us from themselves. I feel like we're in good hands. But those two kids from Danvers High School, the two captains, just amazing to listen to. Also, the coach praising them, of course, as you heard. And going to St. Anselm's and Colgate, respectively, it's just awesome.
Yeah,
taking all the AP courses. So congratulations to Riley D. DiGilio and also Riley DiGilio and also to Livy Anderson. Joining us now is good old sports journalist Mike Grenier. Mike, how are you?
That's just great to hear. You talking about Danvers. You know, we covered them. They've been great for a long time, and more power to them. But I think you might have asked them if they played Masconomet yet. I know Masco, of course, is a longtime powerhouse in the Cape Ann League, but now they're in the Northeastern Conference, and I believe they're unbeaten.
Yep.
They've beaten Beverly a couple times. And I can vouch for this kid, Morgan Bovati, now a senior. She's recovered from a torn ACL. She's tearing up the league right now, scoring a lot of goals. And, I mean, I saw that kid score 44 points in a basketball game as a freshman.
Oof.
Varsity game. 44 points with 11 three-pointers. And she's an outstanding lacrosse player and a fabulous soccer player. So I thought she was on track to get a Division I scholarship. However, she tore up her knee. And, of course, COVID, as we all know, has prevented every kid on the North Shore and many kids throughout the country to curtail their high school season. So it'll be interesting to see what happens they must be scheduled to play Danvers.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. They get Masco Danvers is coming up. I think it's this week, and that's going to be awesome. But I didn't know that about the Masco kid, and hopefully she'll get her due recognition now. I mean, and the season goes on. Mike, as we were saying, Gary feeling a little under the weather. Tim has done some homework on the Masters coming up. But if we open up your sports notebook, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Well, I mean, off the top of my head here, I still haven't come back to earth after Notre Dame upset number one Clemson.
Of course, there you go.
In a game that took like 12 hours and 14 minutes because there were at least 83 booth reviews. But when you see two top-notch teams like that go at it and get into a double overtime, the suspense is just stifling. It's a phenomenal game. Tim, I don't know if you tuned into that game. It was an absolutely great game. And I know following Notre Dame football, that was their first win over a number one team regular season since 1993 when they beat Charlie Ward, who became an NBA player with the New York Knicks, and they beat Florida State University in 1993. So, and I guess on a Boston local type note, you know, Notre Dame now has to come into Boston College this Saturday, and ordinarily I'd say that's a blowout, but you know what, for the first time in years, guys, and Tim, if you follow, they have a coach. BC has a very good coach, and their quarterback is a transfer from Notre Dame. So it's a combustible situation here. If you're Notre Dame, if you have a letdown, this team's going to beat you. I've seen a player, they played Clemson extremely tough the previous week. So I'll start off with that. Number two, we have the Celtics draft coming up a week from Wednesday. And, if they're going to beef themselves up and challenge for an NBA championship, because they've been in the Eastern Conference Final three of the last 4 years, they have to really take the draft seriously from the standpoint of improving their team right now if they want to make that next step forward. So those are two things. And, of course, you know, we have the Patriots just limping along and a must-win against the Jets, who are 0-8 and look like one of the worst teams in history. So
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Notre Dame Clemson, because I was going to say, you know, BC was knocking on the door, on Clemson's door, a couple, you know, last week. But then Notre Dame just kicked it in. So, yeah, that's cool. Tim, what you got? Hello, Tim.
I couldn't believe it had been 27 years since Notre Dame actually knocked off a number one. Usually it happens with a bit more regularity than that for the Fighting Irish. I did not catch any of the game, Mike, though. One of the first things I did Sunday was look for the score, and I saw it went to overtime, and then I read the description, and I was like, holy Moses, that had to be, you know, like most people said, that had to be one for the ages. And again, BC always manages of late to give Notre Dame a game. And you got to figure that the quarterback is going to be highly motivated. The first year coach, who's done an impressive job so far, he's going to be motivated. The players will be motivated to win for him. You know, so I think BC has a lot of positives going into the game. Certainly, Notre Dame will be sky high after the win against Clemson. Certainly,
right? The game is in Boston too, Tim. So there's a, you know, the game's at BC, so they're going to be, you know, BC is going to be wanting to pull off one of the great upsets. And, you know, ordinarily I'd be there in a second. I've covered a lot of BC Notre Dame games at Chestnut Hill. And however, with the COVID, there's no way I could risk it going there. It's just a sad state of affairs, obviously, which we hope the new president will address come January. He's already got a plan, but ordinarily I would have been flying high going to BC on Saturday for that game.
Yeah, it's going to definitely be a different kind of atmosphere to play. The players are going to have to generate their own crowd noise in their head. Going back to the Celts, Mike, who do they go after with the first pick? You know, we talked a few weeks back about they need a big man. A big man in the middle who can clog the middle, who can score points, who can rebound, especially defensively, and be more of a presence on the guys that they have rotating through the paint now. Is there anybody out there
that they have
their eye on?
Well, there are. However, they're not. They won't be available the number 14 pick, which is why I'm hearing a lot of talk about Danny Ainge consolidating his three number one, his first round picks. He got the number 14 pick, number 26 pick, the number 30 pick, and the philosophy or the thinking is that he might be able to package those and trade them. He wants to move up, obviously, to get a really quality player, and a lot of teams that didn't have good records last year. For example, the New York Knicks. I use them as an example because they need players, period. So if Ainge offers three picks for the Knicks pick, when the Knicks are going to be number five, I believe, or number six, you know, the thinking is that the Knicks might want to have three players to work with in this upcoming draft because they've got basically nothing. They've been terrible for many years, as we all know. They might be willing to trade with the Celtics. And in this case, you have Tom Thibodeau is the new head coach of the New York Knicks. As we know, he has a North Shore connection. He's a Salem State College guy. He played there. He coached there. And not only that, he was an assistant coach to Doc Rivers when they won the championship in 2008. So would Ainge want to talk to the Knicks GM, general manager, and say, hey, you know, Thibodeau could use our three guys. Give us your number, your first-round pick. This is at number five. It's in the top six or seven. So that's one way they can move up, Tim, and get the type of guy that you're talking about, a big guy. And I agree with you. They need a big guy who can score, who can defend, especially a shot blocker. You know, they thought they had this with Robert Williams. As we've seen, he's shown flashes of it in his 2 years. But two things against him. He has not remained healthy. He's been in and out of the lineup. And secondly, he hasn't seemed to get it yet. He hasn't grasped the entire notion of what Brad Stevens wants on defense. and sometimes he gets caught out of position. He gets scored on very easily. He's still intriguing because he's so athletic. He's legit 6'10", 6'11". But so far, Brad Stevens has not been able to trust him, certainly in playoff situations. He gets sporadic playing time because he does not get the entire picture defensively with the Celtics.
Okay, so who is out there that probably will go top five that the Celts, if they were able to move up, would be able to get a chance at?
Well, I mean, there's this kid that right now is projected at the number three spot, James Wiseman, W-I-S-E-M-A-N. 7'1" out of the University of Memphis. He's only played 1 year. Skilled big man, very athletic, has the height certainly of 7'1", but he's projected to go number three overall to the Charlotte Hornets. So he'd have to slip one spot or two to be available to the Celtics. The next guy that's projected in the draft is from Tel Aviv, Israel, 6'9". You know, he plays at Maccabi Tel Aviv, so you don't know about those guys. You know, Luka Doncic, not that many people knew about it. Some teams passed on him because he came out of Europe, and all of a sudden he's a superstar. A couple of years into the league, he's only like 19 or 20 years old. They figure this kid, Deni, D-E-N-I, Avagili, I can't even pronounce his name, Avagili, A-V-D-I-G-A. He's projected to go number four overall, 6'9". Can play the power forward or perhaps the five, meaning the center position. He's 6'9", and he apparently is athletic enough to defend a power forward and the centers in the NBA. So again, it's as usual, it's a crapshoot with the draft because there's so many guys who are under 20 years old who submit their names, and it's really still a chancy thing. I mean, everybody passed on Giannis when he came out several years ago, including the Celtics, because he was such a raw talent, couldn't score, couldn't do this, couldn't do that, but give him 4 or 5 years in the league and he became a terror. So that's what you're looking at with the draft these days. The old days, of course, Tim, we knew, and Rick, you know this, guys used to go to college for 4 years and you kind of knew what you were getting in the draft. You could see him for 4 years playing at Duke or North Carolina or anywhere, USC. And you knew what you were getting. You were getting a 21-year-old, mature, young guy who had played 3 or 4 years of college ball. As we know, that just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, you know, Red Auerbach, I hate to say it, but, you know, when he drafted Larry Bird, and I remember this, he drafted Bird as a junior, and I'm thinking, what the hell is he doing?
Exactly. Yeah, you know. And a lot of people, he found a loophole in the rules to be able to do that. You know, he picked him as the future, and Celtics fans had to wait a year, and, you know, they had to wait a year to get him, and it was a bad team before he got there, but they went from a 29-win team the year before he got there to a 60-win team the year that he did get there. So that was a 31-game improvement. And 60 wins out of 82 games. I mean, come on.
Oh, man.
He made them a kind of an instant contender. And, of course, Kevin McHale came along the following year, 1981. And bingo, they win the championship, you know, beating the Houston Rockets. One guy can make a lot of difference, but it's a much chancier proposition these days when you're going from guys from Tel Aviv, Israel, or Serbia, or, the Euro Leagues or whatever. Or else, you know, a lot of teams, whoever Mike Krzyzewski, picks up out of high school becomes an instant.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
For 1 year.
Yeah, Jason
Duke
Tatum.
Is breeding ground for those top three or four players in the draft.
All right, listen, Mike, I was going to ask Gary to reminisce about an experience at Augusta National because he's done that a few times for us here.
Yes, he has. Yeah.
And there have been and he paints the picture so well. Been a great time down there, and I want to ask you, and I know it's not fair to ask you off the top of your head, but is there a venue that you have visited, and I know Notre Dame probably comes right to the top of the list, but is there a venue that is really just brings just warm memories to you, and it's like, oh man, this was a good experience?
Well, I don't know. I tell you what, to me, you can't beat the atmosphere. Tim, you went to the old garden before the new building was built in 1994.
13909.
Yes, I can just... I've been through so many exciting games at the old Boston Garden, which had no air conditioning. And what the instant game that comes to mind for me is the 1976 triple overtime against...
Phoenix?
Against the Phoenix Suns.
Yep.
No, against the Phoenix Suns. Game 5, triple overtime, which the Celtics won, and then they went out to Phoenix, where Gary Larrabee covered that game, Game 6, when the Celtics won. But that triple overtime game and the atmosphere in there, people sweating from the moment they got in because it was June and it was hot, and the old Boston Garden contained all that heat. There was no way to vent it out. And the atmosphere that night was so incomparable that, you know, that number one sticks out in my mind. And, of course, you know, a little bit later, 7 or 8 years later, we had those great Lakers-Celtics games in 1984. And 1985 when they lost the Lakers, and those were phenomenal as well. But for sheer suspense and a triple overtime game, that's hard to beat.
The one that gives me goosebumps, and Tim, maybe you can chip in with yours, and I wasn't at the Garden, but I watched it on television. I think it was when Philly beat Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, and everybody started yelling, beat L.A.
Yeah, I was there for that. Tim,
you were there.
Tim,
that's the one that blew me away.
Oh, my favorite... At the Garden. My freshman year at San Jose, a bunch of us went in, and I don't even remember the outcome, but we got underneath the stands, and we got over by the Celtics locker room, and we got to see them come out for the second half, and Dave Cowens walked in front of me, and I was amazed at how small he was.
Right.
You know, you watch him on TV, and he looks like a middle linebacker.
Yep.
He walks by me, and I'm thinking, how the hell does he do this night after night? Because he runs so much. I mean, he didn't have an ounce of fat on him.
Right.
But he was just sinewy. I mean, and see, just imagine the strength that he had. And I'm thinking, my God, he's not that tall. He's not that big. And he goes out there, and he beats the living daylights out of these other guys.
Oh, yeah. That's a great thought, Tim. Dave Cowens, one of the definitely my favorite overlooked Celtic Hall of Famers, if you can call a Hall of Famer overlooked, because he played in the 70s. A lot of people don't remember that era. They won two titles, 1974 and 76. But Dave Cowens battled the 7-foot centers and the 6'11" centers at 6'8". But he was such a determined guy, and like you said, he never stopped running. He made himself a huge impact player and a great player, had a great career.
He was the perfect complement to John Havlicek.
Oh, yeah. Another guy who could run all day.
Oh, yeah.
John
yeah.
Havlicek. My favorite Celtic of all time is John Havlicek. Larry Bird, obviously, more talent. But John Havlicek, to me, epitomized Rick. I mean, you like to mention Red Auerbach. He epitomized the Red Auerbach player in the sense that completely team-oriented. His first few years, he was regarded as the best sixth man in the NBA, and then obviously he became a star. But to me, Havlicek represented...
From Ohio State.
Well, I was going to say, my memory seems to go back to Ohio State and Cincinnati when Oscar... Didn't the Big O play in Cincinnati and Havlicek was at Ohio State?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And of course, both teams had players who went into the NBA and had long careers.
Yeah, Jerry Lucas.
Lucas was one, and I interviewed him when he was with the Knicks, and they had some great... series against the Celtics in the early 70s. That's the last time the Knicks were any good. They won a couple of titles in the early 70s.
Got to tell you one
last time they were any good.
One highlight for me, and this will be my last comment, was Roger Campbell was a teacher at Gloucester High School for many years and good friend of Dwayne Johnson at the Celtics. But he also has season tickets, and he still does. And back at the old Garden, he was, I think, in the third row from the floor. And directly behind him was Red Auerbach's chair in the aisle. Red Auerbach, and I got Roger took me to a game one night. Don't even remember who the hell was playing, but Sat Sanders had just been named coach of Harvard University, and Tom Sanders was sitting next to Red Auerbach at halftime. And I said to Roger, Roger, you're here all the time. Do you think it would be, you know, could I go up and just congratulate Sat Sanders? And he said, sure, go. And Sat Sanders was the nicest gentleman. He stood up, said, how do you do? Yeah. Talk with me like I was his friend. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. And you know what, guys? I saw last week the Celtics, they promoted a T-shirt that honor in 1964, Red Auerbach, the first coach ever to have an all-black starting five.
Wow.
Brigade. Tommy Heinsohn was injured. And, Tim, I could throw this at both. Who were the starting five in that game? Obviously, if we have a minute, let's just throw
all
that
right
out there.
Casey, Sam.
1964.
Sam Jones.
Casey.
Jones.
Russell.
Zach Sanders. And who would have been on the other side?
Russell.
Well, that's the toughest. That's the mystery. And I could throw it. Rick, you want to give it a shot?
I can't. No, I can't come up with it.
Okay, well, it was Willie Knowles.
Willie Knowles, all right.
Willie Knowles, who was with the Celtics for 3 years.
That's the name I couldn't think of. I knew who it was. I just couldn't bring his name up. Oh.
Yeah, well, he played three. Yeah, as we know, right? He's one of those classic Auerbach pickups. He would pick up veterans who still had a couple of years left in the tank and make good use of them, Bailey Howell, people like that.
Yep.
Well, Willie Knowles won number 12. He had already played 8 or 9 years in the league, and he wrapped up his career with the Celtics. And, you know, that was the all-black starting five, first team that ever did it, you know, and Red Auerbach never worried about color, despite Boston's reputation.
Wasn't Willie Knowles the first black in the NBA?
No, Chuck Cooper was, right? Chuck Cooper. Okay. And that's the guy that Auerbach, you know, came along and took him. You know, Auerbach was kind of a leader with regard to, you know, not looking at color and saying I'm picking the best players and putting them on the court.
I think it even goes beyond that, Mike. I think he did look at color and he saw people, he saw human beings, and
yes,
he saw talent and he saw love. I mean, Bill Russell's love for Red Auerbach is just it's a thing of legend, and it's just in terms of the history of the civil rights movement in this country, I don't think Auerbach and Russell have been given enough credit.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, generations, younger generations, they have no clue as to what those two men did.
Right.
So, yeah, if we're wrapping this up, that's a great way to wrap it up. But Willie Knowles...
I got one more thing I got to tell you.
Go ahead.
Because he just passed away recently. I met Gail Sayers and got his autograph.
Oh, Gail Sayers. My goodness. We were both teenagers. Watching that guy run, he was the most elusive.
Yep.
He was the most elusive, and he had more moves than, I don't know, dancers do.
He had spider legs.
You couldn't, and he played on horrible playing surfaces.
Yep.
And, you know, he'd score five or six. I think it was one game. Did he score six or seven touchdowns in one game?
Yep. After he retired, his wife was doing fundraising events, and she came to Prince George's County where I was teaching down in Maryland, and he came with her. And my friends who were going to the fundraiser said, "Hey, do you want to come along?" "Yeah, okay." I went along. And there's Gail Sayers. I have a picture with him somewhere in my collection. And but gracious, my word.
Oh yeah. And it's sadly, as we know, back in, he messed up his knee, and back then they didn't have the medical technologies. They have these. Otherwise, his career would have lasted longer. But for his short career, he accomplished so much. And I think people who grew up seeing him play at all had that image of him just cutting by defenders and just having so much elusiveness. And he was one of the most exciting players I've ever seen on the pro football level to this day. And he played in the 60s. So, you know, that's pretty darn good.
And wasn't, what was the book, I Am Third? Is that the book he wrote? Or he ghost wrote?
At least, I read it. I think, oh, God, I had to be still in my college days.
With Brian Piccolo, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Good friend.
Listen. Yeah, his relationship with Brian Piccolo, of course, legendary. You know, Brian Piccolo died of cancer, and Gail Sayers and his wife were right at his side. They were great, great friends. You know, they roomed together, a black man and a white man, and that just wasn't done that much in those days. And both played for the Chicago Bears. It was a great story.
Yeah.
Gail Sayers was one of the all-time fabulous athletes.
All right, listen, Mike, you took us from high school, which I really appreciated, through college, into the pros, and I hope there's something left in the tank for next week as well.
Yeah, sure, we can do it. And, of course, hopefully Gary Larrabee will be feeling better, and he'll tell you all about the Masters.
Sounds good. Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. It's great to hear from you as well.
Thank you, Mike. Always good to hear from you.
Talk to you later, Mike. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
All right, that's Mike Renier, who is a sports journalist. And, Tim, I made you do all the homework. Anything you want to mention about what's coming up here on Thursday?
It's definitely going to be strange. You know, there's nobody for the practice rounds. There's nobody for the tournament itself. They put in extra trees, they think, just to slow down Bryson DeChambeau, because he's just been crushing the ball. The grass is looking good despite the time of year, because they blended in rye grass over the Bermuda grass that's normally there. The rough is longer, which is a little abnormal. And there are no, of course, they don't need them, the ropes to hold the gallery back. So they've actually painted lines along where the ropes would normally be to give the players an indication of where the rough is off to the sides of the fairway.
All right.
It's going to be an interesting TV view.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Tim. And we'll flesh this out next week with Gary. And Gary, we certainly hope you feel better real quickly.
Please,
I know.
Friend. Absolutely. Feel better. Get better quick.
Absolutely. All right, Tim, thank you. Go watch the Patriots. Talk to you later.
All right, you guys.
Thanks, Coach. That's Tim Kearns, our MSO Ambassador of Goodwill and Sports Analyst Extraordinaire. Thank you to all our visitors tonight. Really appreciate everybody participating, and always fun to talk with Mike Grenier, and it was a blast talking with Danvers girls soccer coach Jimmy Hinchin and his captains Riley DeGilio and, of course, Livy Anderson. Just really, really fascinating to listen to those kids and, of course, to the coach. Thank you for joining us. Spread the word. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. This is msonewsports.com.